Okay, I'm going to get started. Today we have Diane Gotsman with us. She's a national etiquette expert, author, and founder of the Protocol School of Texas. She lives where I live in San Antonio, and her work is featured throughout the country on a regular basis. I assure you, you have seen or read her advice when you have pick up a magazine, watch TV, whatever, you've seen some of her stuff. And her work is featured across in magazines and articles from the New York Times, Boston Globe, Chicago Tribune, to Huffington Post. She's really all over. And I'm going to ask that, at, you know, sometime during this course, somebody, Melissa or Malcolm, you can stick it some of the links into the chat box so you can see what you can go to. Diane is an authority on social and professional etiquette, and I asked her to be our guest today because there are so many questions regarding the current COVID-19 issue and the new normal we are all experiencing. Diane, welcome to our group. I want to get started by asking you about the platform we are on now, Zoom. What has been your experience so far? Have you had a pretty, exceptional experience that I know a little bit about, and I'm wondering if you can share with our group. So why don't you take it away, my friend?
Okay, well, first of all, those were several comments and questions. So the question is, my experience with Zoom is much like what we, several of us, had before we got started. Hello, everyone, by the way. I'm so happy to be here. Zoom is a brand new platform for all of us. And, you know, Karen and I, my colleague and friend that I'll introduce you to in a little while, and then Malcolm and Linda, we have all been on Zoom together and separately. And it's not easy. You know, practice makes perfect, but we're still practicing, and it's a struggle. But this is the new norm. And I think that one of the things that we all need to really think about is, and consider, is it's never going to be perfect. I mean, you know, life isn't perfect. That's what I train. A matter of fact, the second I started talking, I have my door open and these dogs next door are barking. I'm sorry. So didn't I say I didn't shut this door, Malcolm? And there they are. So the reality is we have to continue to go through this new normal, making allowances and compromises and understanding that it's a learning curve for all of us. So I think Zoom is here to stay. I think there are other platforms for meetings as well. But my experience has been hit and miss. And in terms of what Linda is referencing, you know, one of my very first meetings, Malcolm helped me with it, and he was a lifesaver, was with, it was pretty nerve-wracking. And it will not be on social media. You know, as Linda said, I do a lot of media. And when I am in the media, part of that deal is I put it out there. That's part of doing what I do. They expect me to post the links where I am published or where I'm quoted. But this was not one of those. So I'm telling you, but this will never go up on social media. So I got to work a few weeks ago I got an email from someone who wanted to know if I could do Zoom, do a quick little Zoom training. And it was A-Rod and J-Lo and their kids. And it was nerve-wracking because we're all new on this platform. And A-Rod had contacted me through his rep and wanted to do a really fun celebration for his daughter, who was having a birthday. So we did the whole setup, and it was the training was flawless, but the technology was a disaster. So when Malcolm said, "You're on your own, goodbye," then my son popped in, and it was nothing short of a nightmare, but it still went off without a hitch. You know, they still loved it. So it's all about just kind of rolling with the punches and understanding that this dog's going to drive me crazy. I'm going to have to get up. And it's a good thing I'm wearing pants right now. That's another Zoom training. You need to make sure that you're just on top and bottom. So that's with Zoom. You know, and I'm happy to talk about Zoom, but what I'm really here to talk about is, and some of you have already heard me speak many years ago, not too long ago, but everything about us is sending a message. And now we're having to send this message virtually. We're having to send it electronically through email. So just because we have this pandemic going on, we still have to continue to build relationships. But right now we're not hustling. Right now we're not trying to close deals. We're trying to maintain an intentional relationship to support each other during this time and keep our foot in the door for business. So I want you to make sure that you're interrupting me because we have 30 minutes and I'm going to turn it over to Karen, who's also going to give you some great information on the medical side. But I want you to ask me questions. I want you to interrupt me because it's now or forever hold your peace. This is not a training session as much as it's a Q&A. Many of the things that I am asked right now with this new normal is gestures. How do we greet people? And how are we supposed to be communicative and warm without the handshake, without the human touch? And right now we don't want anyone to touch us and vice versa. So when you're meeting and greeting someone, you know, it has to be something that's good for you. It has to be comfortable for you, but you're holding your hands up, you're bringing them back. If it's comfortable for you, you're covering your heart, you're doing the heart, you're doing the namaste, whatever is right for you, because it has to be genuine. You know, so oftentimes I hear people say, and you read it, oh, this how are you doing is getting cliche, or how are you feel so overused. But it's not. How are you when you ask someone in a genuine way, not just a off the cuff, how are you doing? How are you sends the message that you really care. And we should not stop asking, how are you? So we as people want to know that people are connecting with us and care. So whether you're in business or whether you are interacting socially, asking someone how they are doing, what they need, how can I support you, is not cliche. It's something that we should continue to do and make it a point to reach out to people that you talk to on a regular basis and those that you don't. I don't know about you all, but I've had so many clients contact me and ask me how I'm doing even before I could get to them. And it's been a way for me to reconnect, and it's a building tool. It's a professional building tool. So again, you're not trying to close a deal, but you are trying to keep that connection. And that's really important during this time.
Here's one question, Diane, from the chat. Annie asked, do you think being more animated is better when using Zoom?
I think you need to have a natural cadence to your voice. I feel like you have to have natural body language. You will notice that my hands aren't up here, unless you're pointing to something, and even then you're directing. You don't want to appear nervous because you appear jittery. So I do think that you have to have, your tone has to be inflective, your facial features have to be expressive, and you have to be looking at the camera lens. You have to be looking straight into the lens, because if I'm looking down at a corner, I'm not looking at you. And even though we all know that that's uncomfortable, it still is a way to connect with someone. So I think that it has to be your natural personality. But I'll tell you, I have two stories I want to share with you. And these just came up yesterday. Somebody had contacted me, actually sent me a picture, and I don't recommend that. You know, you never share photos of anyone without their permission. That's social media 101. But they did send me a picture of this person on Zoom. And she had a t-shirt that said, and pardon my French, I apologize in advance, her t-shirt said, don't be an ass. Now, this is in a business meeting. So even if it were in a social meeting, I don't care if you were having a virtual cocktail party, that already sends the message. Her facial expressions were mirrored her t-shirt, let me put it that way. So, you know, people make judgments based on what they see. And that becomes their version of the truth. And I know Beth and Deborah and Linda, and you know, you've heard me say this for years, and it's my message over and over and over again. It's real hard to run away from who you are, but we all have to decide who we are and who we want to be, whether we are 21 or whether we are 71. So it takes a conscious effort. Okay, the second thing I want to tell you about that message that I got was the facilitator in the same Zoom meeting, there was a calamity of errors, evidently. The facilitator, the whole time she spoke, had her eyes closed. They sent me a video of this as well. She spoke with her eyes closed the entire time. And it's probably because she was nervous. You know, our nerves get in the way so often. But we have to prepare. If we know we're going to be a facilitator or even a guest, because you are all guests in this room right now. You know, we are all sitting in the same room, basically. It's all of our responsibility to be responsive. So if I look down at Valerie, and you're not Valerie, but if she were frowning, or if she were looking down, you know, checking her phone, or, you know, we notice that. Or if I'm looking at Deborah and she's filing her nails, or Cliff's, you know, flossing his teeth, we notice these things. So just because we're behind a camera doesn't mean that we aren't seen. Much like just because we're behind a keyboard, when we email, you know, we tend to get a little bolder behind a keyboard. So I think that we're always consciously thinking. So that's the answer to that question. Are there any other questions before I can ramble for about 6 hours and not take a breath. So 30 minutes is, I want to really get in what you want to know about today.
Yeah, here's another question. It says, when company is working on a deal with a client on Zoom and staff is thinking or in deep thought, we often look like blank faces. Any suggestions so we don't come across as disinterested?
It kind of goes back to what I just said. You know, it is what it is. People are going to look and see what you look at if they happen to land on you. And there's a difference between pondering and taking notes and coming back up than a frozen state of irritation. So when we're working, we're all working. Sometimes you're going to be in a board meeting. You're going to be contemplating, but a pensive look is different than just boredom or distraction. So, you know, again, be easy on yourself. Don't overthink it, but be aware that people are noticing.
Okay, Diane, I know you get a lot of calls from the media all over the country. I think you just said, what was it, from Chicago, whatever their newspaper is. Anyhow, and a lot of it goes out in syndicate. What are some of the most common questions you get asked?
So right now, in this period of time, it is about delivery drivers. And you know, you might be thinking, well, what does this have to do with business? It has everything to do with business because you are part of your business. And that delivery driver may not have something to do with your business or your firm, but it's about who you are and your character and your knowledge and your integrity. And you know, we need to know what we don't know. And one of the big questions is, how do I tip during this pandemic, the delivery drivers, and do I tip and what do I tip? So I'm just going to give you a brief overview. And you tip delivery drivers. And a service charge is different, or a delivery charge is different than a tip. So whether it's a service charge, a delivery charge, those are two separate things. A tip is gratuity. And that's for the driver. And, you know, one of the most common questions that I'm asked right now is should we tip more because of these circumstances? And I say, if you can, do. If you can't, don't. Because every one of us has a different budget right now, a different set of circumstances. And I think if anything comes across, if any message you hear from me comes across, I want there to be a no judgment. We all have very, very different individual lives, and we have to do the best that we can do. We all have a different business. We all are different levels in our business. So if you don't have an extra $5 to tip because you're worried about medication, you know, we have to, we just use our good judgment. But when you can, you do, you know, because they are putting their, they're putting their health on the line, just like all of our first responders, our healthcare workers, you know, I'm speaking to the choir here. But that's one of the questions, delivery. Another one is, and I was just quoted, misquoted in, it was a Chicago Tribune. They did a series of 8 interviews. And when I say misquoted, this was an honest mistake. This was not, I am not a media basher. They are always, most often very accurate, and they changed it immediately. But what they said, I said, was that you should tip the postman. We cannot tip the postman. USPS postal workers cannot accept cash of any kind. They can accept gifts under $20. I don't know that this is the time to send a gift. This isn't a holiday. You know, that's normally when you want to give a little something to a postman, you know, if it's something, if you even do that at all. But I contacted the writer. She was, you know, it goes through multiple editors. They were sorry. And plus, it's on their website. This is a big deal to be misquoted on that. They changed it. It's corrected online now. It's fine. But that is a question that I'm asked. Can I give our postman money? And the answer is no. But a power bar, I said, this is the tip I gave. A power bar, a bottle of water, something that just says, listen, I'm thinking about you. That's fine. Another question I am often asked right now is, what if somebody gives me something and I don't want it? Like if I deliver bread to Linda because I know where she lives and I leave it on her doorstep, what do I do with it? What you do with it is what you want to do with it. So I, you know, if you want to dispose of it, that's, if that's in your comfort level, do that. You know, they are saying though that, you know, within reason, you don't have to worry about the food. There's certain precautions you can take. But I think that in the future, if I took something to Linda and she would say, Diane, that's so sweet of you. Listen, my kitchen is full of things right now. I appreciate it. But on the other side of this, we're going to get together and have lunch. You use your best intentions and you are responsible and you are kind. I think that's the best I can tell you on that. Another question is, do I have to open the door if somebody comes to the door? No, you don't have to open the door. You are not rude if you just through the door say, can I help you? Or if it's a neighbor, hi Eve, what's up? You know, I'm social distancing. So we have to learn the new norm, and a lot of it has to do with courtesy. But courtesy and health go hand in hand, and we protect ourselves and we protect others. So you always keep that paramount in your mind. What are the questions?
Now, there is a problem with even handling money, and we're supposed to give them cash for if we're tipping.
Are you asking if you're supposed to give them cash? You can tip them on the app. Tip them on the app. That's
okay.
Fine. And, you know, I am not a healthcare worker, and I am not the CDC, so I can't tell you how to handle, you know, I'm out of my realm if I'm not talking about behaviors and professional behaviors and social behaviors. So if you are comfortable handling cash, do it. I don't know all of the ramifications, but I will tell you this. I have tipped on the app, and my delivery driver has been so exceptional. I'm giving them an extra X, you know, something in an envelope. That's cash in my wallet. So I think that we could drive ourselves crazy, you know, if we try and micromanage every little detail. I think we are proactive, we are protective, and we do the best that we can. And everybody is going to have a different comfort level. And that's another question that I'm asked. What happens if I see somebody who's not social distancing? You're not the police. You're not the social distance police, I should say. So if it doesn't involve your own little microcosm of a world, it's not up to you to cross the street, meet a perfect stranger, and start an argument with that stranger. I mean, then you're not social distancing. You know, then you're in their space. And I feel like it's right now, it's really easy to be emotional and to be charged up when you see something that's not, that could risk other people's health. But you need to maintain your own sanity as well. And I feel like it's, you know, here's a perfect example. Yesterday I posted an article on Facebook, and it was an article that generally, it was an article that I had, I think, one or two quotes. It was a minor article compared to other articles in terms of my input. But I put it on Facebook and I had this man rant. Now, this happens 1% of the time to me on my Facebook page. He left one comment and it was inappropriate and just weird, basically. It was links to something really dramatic. Then he left a second comment. And rather than delete him, I addressed him. And his name was Ed. It's on there, so I'll just tell you this. His name was Ed. Well, then after Ed started leaving multiple comments, other people started jumping in. Somebody would say, well, Ed, not to Ed's support. You know, it was in support of the article or me or whatever. So anyway, poor Ed started deleting all of his posts one by one. 7 posts became 6, became 5, became 4. He ended up apologizing. So Ed's kind of a wild hare. And I said, thank you to Ed. But the point is, we don't want to be an Ed. You know, I'm using him as an example. We don't want to be that person. You don't rant on social media to begin with. That's a social media tip. You don't express major views on social media. And we're all in business. We're all in business. By the way I would have handled Ed is exactly like I would have handled Ed. I might have just ignored Ed, but it was kind of a judgment call. But the person you are on social media is the person you are in life. It's just the way it is. You can't be 3 people. You can't be this person at church. You can't be this person at the grocery store. And you can't be this person in business. So it's really important to have an idea of who we want to be. And that can happen whether you're 20 years in business, 2 years in business, or about to retire. Because we can always do better. We can always do better. So that's kind of the message with that.
Yeah, Diane, we've got about 5 more minutes, and there's 2 questions from Heather. One is, can you go over good email communication? And then there's kind of a related question also from Heather. Do we really need to be writing "stay safe" at the end of emails? It seems insincere to me, but many are doing it.
Yeah. So Heather, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. Doorbell. There we go. See? Dog, doorbell. This is my life. I believe if they say "stay safe," I want them to say it. And the reason why is because I want to give them the benefit of the doubt that they really mean it. I know that when people are contacting me and these are my clients and they're saying to me, "stay safe," I truly believe they mean it. When I say it, if I say it and I do say it, I mean it. So I would hate to take a courtesy away from someone. It becomes our filter. Everything is a filter. You've already decided, those of you who have never met me, or this might be the first time you've ever seen me, you've already decided whether you like me, whether you trust me, whether you will ever want to do business with me in the future, just based on what you've seen. And that's what we do. And based on what you hear and based on what you see, you know, electronically. So I think we have to be true to who we are. And there's a lot of business to go around. And if that person is saying "stay safe," I think we just need to let them have it. I would let them have it. Part 2 of that question. Whoever is at my door, social distancing, they are banging at my this. I've been home for how many weeks and nobody has ever come to my door and banged, and they're banging on my door now. Okay. Malcolm, what was part 2 of that?
The other part was, can you go over good email communication?
Okay. Yes. And I have it online, by the way. Any topic you want to find out about, type the topic and type my name, and chances are you're going to find something. So email communication is straight to the point. It's polite. It's kind. It's friendly, but it's not rambling. Make sure your subject line is very clear. So if you're going back and forth, and you're changing topics, make it easy by changing the subject line to follow the topic that you're talking about in your email. you can say, and you know, you should have some type of small greeting. Don't just jump into, I need such and such papers by Thursday before. So, and then of course, always close. And if you don't know them well, and we should all have this anyway, our email should have our signature line, and it should follow up even in responses with a signature line or a way that they can find you. That way we don't have to search. Was there something, Heather, specifically though, that you wanted to hear about with email?
No, it kind of both comments together in that when people are saying the stay safe at the end, I mean, I'm not saying that because I don't know the people very well. They're just business associates. I'm not saying that, but I don't want to come across as being rude either for not saying it. It's just this weird kind of thing. I obviously wish everybody to be safe, but I'm not typing that at the end of my emails.
It is. And I would recommend, especially since that's your feeling, and you're not doing it to, it's on silent, I don't know. And you're not doing it to be unkind, I understand. You're just wondering how to close. So you're not going to protocol hell for saying it, and you're not going to protocol hell for not saying it. It's just something that has to be within your own comfort level. Everything we do, our behaviors must be within our own comfort level. I hope that they have intention. I hope they have inspiration. I hope they have integrity, but they really have to be who you are, or else it comes across as affected. That's the bottom line with this. And so are there any last questions before I close? And turn
yeah,
it
one,
up?
One final question. Beth says, Diane, we saw each other at the beginning of all this and other people were shaking hands. You made eye contact, smiled, and said very nicely, I'm not shaking hands right now. And then right into, so good to see you. No need to start with sorry, but how do we stand our ground and not feel the need to start with sorry?
Right. Just, you know, you just own it. And if sorry comes out because it came out of your mouth, you don't have to fish it back in. It's much like a bad handshake down the road. You don't have to say, oh, let's do this again. You know, whatever is true to you, but instead of saying, sorry, I'm not shaking hands, you can just say, I'm social distancing. You know, I'm practicing social distance. It's great to see you. If they reach out to shake your hand, you might say, I'm sorry. You know, I would probably say, I'm sorry, I'm not shaking hands. I mean, just because it's a term. Not because you're sorry, prophetically sorry. It's just a kindness. And by the way, I want to say something about Beth. Beth, how many years ago did we meet?
Diane, it's been too many. I don't know, maybe 10?
Maybe. It's a long time ago. Right? So this is how life works. Beth and I met a long time ago. We haven't seen each other for all of these years. And then we went to an event at Trinity together this many years later. And she remembered a tiny little detail. And I didn't see her in the audience because I was speaking and she was in the audience and she reintroduced herself to me. And it made such a huge impact on me. And then she responded, she said something to me on LinkedIn. And now Beth, every time I think of her, I see her name, I light up. And that's authentic. And had she have not said to me, Diane, you spoke so many years ago and I met you such and such ago, we would have been two ships passing. So when you want to connect, rather than when you want to connect, it was the right thing to do to connect. It made my day. I made a new friend, and it was just a positive experience. It made me feel good. You know, people do business with people they trust. People do business with people they like. People befriend people they align with. And that's what this is all about. There is nothing about the conversation that I teach corporately or socially, and corporate and social overlap, that's robotic or not authentic. It has to be authentic to you. But your business is based on your dollars and cents, whether you're in the healthcare industry, whether you're in accounting, whether you drive for Uber or Lyft. We all align with people who we trust. And that's what this is all about. So I really thank you for, Linda, thank you for letting me come. I appreciate it. Deborah, I'm so happy to see you. You know, I have friends out here that I haven't seen in a long time. And it's Valerie, my new friend, I just made today. So, you know, this is how we roll. This is what life is about. And speaking of friends, I have a friend and a colleague here with me, Karen Hickman, and she is a professional etiquette consultant. She works in the healthcare industry. She trains healthcare professionals. She was actually a nurse before she went into this field, and she takes her expertise into her training. So today she's going to take a few minutes and talk to you about televideo medicine. So Karen, I'd like to introduce my friend Karen Hickman.
Thank you, Diane, and thank you again to Linda for allowing me to share the stage with both of you, all of you, and I'm delighted to be here. Diane and I have been friends for a number of years, and the truth is we have never met in person, but we feel like the best of friends because we do video calls, we spend lots of time on the telephone, we trust each other's advice and go back and forth as etiquette and protocol professionals, and she's been just a real joy to have as a friend in my life. And so again, I thank her for sharing this spotlight with me today. I do train in the corporate sector, but I primarily work in the healthcare field, and in fact,
see, there's Zoom. There it is. Karen seems to be frozen.
Yeah, Karen, we lost you.
Not because of disinterest.
That's right.
He's just frozen.
I relate to what she's going through.
Oh, there she is. Now she's back.
Okay, good.
Oh, did I go away?
Yes. You were frozen.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Anyway, this telemedicine and the video medicine is not new. It's been around for a few years. However, the COVID-19 virus has certainly ramped it up. And I was just speaking with the people today that I do all the work with. It's Parkview. And they had started getting this in place some months ago, but fortunately they were a little ahead of the game, so they now have implemented this and are utilizing it because, as you all know, many patients and who have routine visits are not showing up in the offices. They don't want them there, and it's not safe for them to be there. So the tele and the video calls are becoming more and more prominent and more important. I think they will diminish after this pandemic is gone, but I don't think they're going to go away now. I think some patients are going to find that they really like that format to communicate with their physicians. So I think for the physicians and nurse practitioners and the PAs or the providers that are involved in the video calling in particular, I think it's important, number one, that they do a little training in it, that they know how to navigate all of the technology. And healthcare isn't typically using Zoom or Skype. They have their own platforms that they are utilizing because privacy is key for them in dealing with patients. And I think that's also a real comfort level for patients. So I think also training the staff. We have call centers now, and one of my big projects last summer was writing the training manual for the call center. So there, we assume that people know how to answer the telephone, and those of us who use the computer and this kind of technology regularly assume that people would already know how to do that, but that isn't the case. So a little instruction and some basic courtesy and etiquette for these formats are very important, I think. So I think it's important for the staff to know a little bit about the patient before they jump on the call. And most of the calls, the patient has to register and then fill out some sort of form so the person who's going to return the call will have an idea of why the patient is requesting the call. So they may have some background on the patient. They may also have be able to tap into the patient's electronic medical records, but not all of the physicians, if it's an on-demand service that is a 24-hour service, they may have limited access to a patient's chart or their information. So it's important to take good information as they're on the call with the patient. One of the things I often tell physicians and all of the healthcare workers is, and as Diane talked about earlier, that perception is reality. And the patient's perception of their care is the patient or is the physician in the medical practice is reality. You may think you delivered the care beautifully, but if the patient perceives it as not a very good delivery of care, that is now your reality. And there may be ramifications for that patient's perception. So I encourage medical people to look at their practices, and even when they're working in the hospitals, look at things from the patient's point of view, and you may get a very different look at things because it can be misinterpreted that healthcare workers are distant or they don't care or that these things become just routine for them. To the point that Diane was talking about not shaking hands, when I talked to one of my leaders at Parkview today, she said she's concerned now with the healthcare staff in the offices that they can't extend their hand for a handshake. And she said now they all also have to wear masks. So the patients can't even see the complete face and get a real sense of the facial expression. So we're talking about maybe some alternate ways that they can connect with the patient physically, but safely within an office visit. So, but it's important for those people making those video calls to be punctual. If that call is going to, the patient is ready for it at 2 o'clock, then that physician or the other providers should be there at 2 o'clock. It's a little different when you're sitting in a waiting room and you're left waiting for 30 minutes. But if I'm connecting virtually, I expect that they're going to be pretty much on time. And I think that can be regulated easier on a virtual call than it can be in person in the office, because things come up that they don't expect in visits with patients that can put them behind. But, you know, good communication skills are important in any situation, making good eye contact, again, like Diane said, looking at that camera. So all of the communication etiquette that you would use in a regular virtual communication, that applies for the medical staff. They should look the part. They should be in an environment with minimal distractions and with a professional background. They shouldn't be sitting there in their pajamas or without their pants on, as Diane said, with the one news media I caught yesterday or the day before. So, and also, do a little check on your technology 15 or 20 seconds before you jump on the call to make sure that your audio is good and your video is good. And then do be prepared, because you don't have control of the patient's audio and visual. Be prepared to switch to a telephone call if need be, if it's too distracting on the patient's end in particular. So, and educate your patients on what they should be prepared to do on that call. Have a list of their complaints that they want to talk about, but have those prioritized. Make sure they have their med list available. And if it's an older person and they're not very tech savvy, that may be the time they pull in a support system with an adult child or even an adult grandchild to help navigate the technology. So, any questions on any of that?
I had a quick question for you, Karen.
Sure.
Telemedicine is actually embedded in part of my practice. People can actually call me anytime if they're members. It's not quite the same as other ones. But when you mentioned about being in PJs, I chuckled there because I like scrubs because they're as comfy as PJs.
Yes.
From your perspective, like everyone's wearing a white coat in the hospital these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the CPAs are wearing white coats in the hospitals, it seems. I exaggerate. Yeah. But from the patient perspective, how many, and I've seen stats on patients prefer me to wear a tie and white coat versus scrubs and like, because I do part urgent care, part primary care.
Sure. So you're switching back and forth in what you're wearing.
Yep.
I don't think ties are essential these days. My late husband was a physician and we were married for 31 years. The man never went to the hospital without a tie, but that was his comfort level and he's been gone now a number of years. So I think for younger physicians, the white coat is not a bad thing. And especially if you have your name embroidered on it, I think that's very helpful. I think though in some situations it could be intimidating. I wouldn't expect you to wear your white coat in the middle of the night if you're taking on-demand calls virtually on the telephone or on your computer. But I think a scrub top would probably be great in that situation. But I do think that sometimes the white coats get overdone. And I think it's important that people can identify who the health caregiver is by what they're wearing. And that's one of the things we did at Parkview, where I do so much work, is color code the nurses, the health housekeeping, the laboratory people, so the patients know based on what that healthcare worker is wearing, who they are and what their role is in the care of the patient.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna say it's a little past our time. And if there's any other questions, we can have one more question. Otherwise, I think we will call it a day. Thank you so much, Karen, for addressing what lots of us are all about. I will say that I do know that when people when we talk to our doctor, we're very anxious generally.
Yes.
And so I would say the most important thing for physicians to do when they're talking, especially in this kind of model, is to just be as empathetic as possible. That's hard, but we're feeling very anxious when we're talking to them. And so we have to, I think that the physicians have to be a little bit more aware of that, because you're not sitting there looking them in the eye. That would be my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And Diane, of course, you were charming as ever. And left us, and I saw something from Beth E.B. Why don't you read that, Malcolm?
Beth says, well, I made a little information. Queen of protocol, I can die happy, y'all.
Isn't that sweet?
Sweet.
And Ramon had one too. I didn't know what Nana, what that was, but he asked a question on, what's the best way, elbow? I feel stupid elbowing to say hey, or do you just wave?
It's a preference. I'm not big on the elbows because I feel weird. And besides that, you're still touching, okay? But I'm not saying it's wrong. But my preference is just to raise my hands and pull them back. It has to be something, okay, I don't know about this. I'm not sure, Linda, about that. But it has to be you. The bottom line is it has to be authentic and it has to be you. That's it. And we don't know when this is going to end. So I think that we roll with the punches and we do the very best we can.
And Malcolm, I think, I saw you were putting some of the links out there on, didn't you? So you can look at the chat.
Talk about links. What links are they?
I just put the link to your website. Diane.
Oh, good. Okay. Linda was asking me for links, everyone, and I kept thinking, what links? I wasn't quite sure what links.
Well, it's a great site, and it's got, if you're interested, it's got links to everywhere Diane's appeared and our courses and everything. So it's really a good site.
I would love for you to follow me on Facebook. We're not collecting likes on Facebook, but I put everything out there so you get information every single day. LinkedIn is another outlet for me, but Facebook is kind of my favorite. Thank you all for having me. It's so nice to see all of my friends, from Beth to Deborah to Melissa to Linda to Malcolm and Valerie and Susan, and now I have new friends. So thank you. Keep in touch, and I appreciate you having me.
I already joined Facebook. I went on and liked you. So I'm in.
Thank
you. Okay. Bye-bye, y'all.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Bye.